Good day, everyone, and welcome back to the Not Safe for Work Photography Podcast. There are thousands of models and photographers creating adult content using modern platforms and taking control of their own creative lives. Today, we're interviewing Samantha St. James. This is Samantha's first podcast, and she started working in the adult industry when she moved to LA to go to college. She started in men's magazines and music videos, and then got into adult films. She's coming to us from her house in Miami, which is apparently the current adult work capital. How's your week going, Samantha?
Well, I live in paradise, so pretty good in that respect.
I mean, especially over the next couple months. I was down in Tampa in January a couple years ago, and it was amazing.
Yeah, Tampa, the funny thing that people don't know is Tampa's been the BDSM and fetish capital since all of the companies that were normally like in the East Coast all moved to Tampa about 10 years ago. So Tampa and is really the BDSM like fetish capital. Everyone's down there now. Like every company I worked for in New York and up through even New Hampshire, they're all down in Tampa now.
I go visit someone for work down there. I'm going to have to bring my camera and gear next time, apparently. Geez.
Yeah. It's a thing.
So you started working in adult work back in 1993. That was your first release, right?
Adult hardcore release. Yeah.
Oh, you were doing stuff before that then?
Yeah. Actually I started when I moved to LA to go to college in the mid-80s. I was actually underage, but did not do any magazine work until I was 18, obviously. My mainstream.
Tracy Lords.
Oh God. That was hilarious. And she was she's so much smarter than anyone thought she was. Anyway, that was all planned. My mainstream agent had gotten me a lot of film and TV and music videos, and I was just lucky finding this man who passed away years ago. He was the one agent that was mainstream SAG licensed and bonded, but he also booked some softcore BDSM stuff, the Playboy Channel, Cinemax, Showtime, softcore stuff. Booked magazines as well. Funny enough, the first day I went into interview, Demi Moore and a couple other actresses had been with him for mainstream acting work and then had done magazines and softcore adult work to, you know, pay the bills while they were struggling. So I remember, it's a funny story, I remember him showing me photo albums of her and a couple other people. Here's the ending to the story. He was an older, super sweet gentleman. His name was Hal Gathu. And it was CHN International on Santa Monica Boulevard. And he had been there since the 60s. He was elderly when I got into the business. And when he passed away, he had no children and just a collection of like rescue parrots that he had found. He had cancer and he had found someone to take the parrots. And he was not long for this world. He was quite ill. And he ended up in a Hollywood ending. He ended up offing himself in the office and lit the place on fire because he didn't want anyone, because the sets that he had built in there were in like every softcore and BDSM photo shoot magazine film from the 60s through the 90s, and the wardrobe and props he had, and he didn't want it all getting brokered off or scavenged through. So yep, burned the place to the ground, and to this day he didn't leave it to anyone, so it's just a vacant space where he used to be, which is sad because he was a lovely, lovely man who took care of his talent. So that's how I got into it. They were paying like ridiculous money to do magazine shoots, even on spec, even if it wasn't being directly shot for, say, Playboy or Penthouse or whatever. And then a lot of the photographers were doing some artsy nude bondage fetish sort of erotic stuff on the side. And because I was so easy to work with and fun and wanted to explore a lot of things, I made a lot of money just shooting side stuff for people's side art portfolios or their side erotic fetish art gig that they were doing. And then that fell into them referring me for mainstream, I won't mention brands, but mainstream shoots where a model wouldn't show up for a big jeans company. And they would just call me and be like, I know a girl. She'll be here. She's amazing. So I worked a lot in mainstream modeling because of some of the adultish photographers I worked with. And then that got into music videos. And then that got me into working for some of the bigger magazines, which got me more work for starring in a lot of these Playboy, Cinemax, Showtime things, which I can't get my hands on. So if anyone listening knows where the Cinemax, Playboy Channel, Showtime, they were shot directly for them, by them, between, this would have been, let's just say, late 80s to early 90s. Where those are, I would love to see them, add them to my IMDb or IAFD, along with a bunch of MTV stuff, New Year's Eve parties, and a couple of interviews I did for them. I would also like to get a hold of those.
So you don't have access to those anymore?
I don't think anyone does. They got bought out so many times that they're somewhere, probably in like a dusty warehouse somewhere in, you know, the back of the San Fernando Valley. I mean, they exist somewhere. I'm sure they haven't been digitized or recolorized, which really is a treasure trove. So if anyone out there is creative, they should find all that stuff.
Yeah. All right. So what was it like working in the adult industry back then in the 90s?
Far better than it is today. And anyone who says, oh, it's better now because everyone creates their own content and anybody can shoot. No. Back in the day, there was one top agent who knew I'd been working for as a regular mainstream model and actress and some softcore adult stuff. Hal knew Jim, and he said, well, if you're going to start doing the adult stuff, you know, I can still book you for the BDSM and the fetish and the magazine stuff. But he's the only one that does like hardcore, and I don't do that. So I was like, okay. So I walked into Jim South's office, the Jim South, the porn agent from, you know, 1960s, 70s on through when he passed away. And that motherfucker was, you didn't want to fuck with him. Like, you definitely knew this is a guy originally from Texas who, if a big company ripped him off or tried to do something shitty, somebody would definitely show up with a gun. But he stood by his talent. He took care of talent. He made sure you got your testing and it was paid for, that you got paid, that if you were like me and said, look, I want to be first scene of the day, I'm not going to sit around and wait for 6 hours because somebody was late. I want to pick the guys I work with. You know, he was 150% behind you. Mm-hmm. Love the guy. I walked in his office whenever this was, 90, I want to say it was 92. It was between 92 and 93. I was actually, had left Los Angeles and was living here in Florida. In 92, after my fiancé died of cancer, I moved here just kind of get away from LA. And I had done some amateur stuff in Orlando. Oh, this is funny. I'm just remembering this. I had done some amateur stuff in Orlando with a company, whose name I can't remember, but I think they're still in business. Super sweet couple. They were shooting like amateur boy-girl stuff and girl-girl stuff. So I actually did my first couple of videos in Orlando with this company whose name I can't remember, and I'm sorry if you're hearing this, but I remember it was Dirty Bob, the reviewer's birthday, and they had me sing Happy Birthday as Marilyn Monroe to him. And he gave me like a 5-star review on both my scenes and was like, you should be in LA and really like be a star because you obviously enjoy what you're doing and you're an amazing performer and super fun and whatever. So that's how it started. And when I walked into Jim South's office, his famous phrase was, as I live and breathe. And I was like, yes. And he's like, so you're finally coming over to the dark side. And I'm like, all right, set me up. And he's like, what are you going to do? What are you not going to do? So we went through the whole list and he started booking me for the first time pro videos, which was Ed somebody. They paid $5,000 for the first boy girl professional video on scene. And then there was a second tier one that paid $3,000. And then obviously your first anal, your first DP, your first gangbang all paid. These were all $3,000 to $5,000 scenes and up, which is similar to what the magazines were paying, but I'd already been shot out because I'd been in every men's magazine from A to Z, mm-hmm. doing solos, girl, girls, boy, girls, whatever. So, yeah. So I just started on the roll with Jim South for about 5 years.
What's different about shooting a boy, girl scene between photographers and videographers?
If you're shooting a photo set, I mean, back in the day, I don't know if anyone still shoots just stills, you know, because it used to be like Playboy or Penthouse would have, or Hustler would have a boy girl set or a girl girl set, right? But there was no, they would show, they wouldn't, I I'm trying to remember, because it was stills.
Right.
A lot of it was, you know, just kind of like open your mouth and pose. So they would either show, you know, the dick like 6 inches from your face, or it's already like all in you. Like there was no in between. I remember working with some guys that were gay that hated the whole thing for magazine work. And I was like, just shut up and make it, I'll do all the work. Just shut up and make it look good, you know, cause it was right. stills and it was easier to fake. So I don't know if someone is doing just straight photography, girl, girl, boy, girl, how that's going to work these days. I don't know, because people are shooting couples. A lot of people are just coming in as couples. There's all different genres. There's the heavily tattooed pierced, you know, hardcore market. There's no tattoos and piercings, sort of all American looking market. I would suggest if you're not shooting well-established people or a couple, I mean, you've got to be real careful that you're getting what you're booking and that the shoot's going to go well. And if you're shooting a hardcore scene, even in photos where there's going to be penetration, you've got to make sure that people have been tested. And I know all the companies run everybody through talent testing and there's VIP testing. For a lot of people, they can't drop $180, $200 every 3 weeks to get tested. So I have always kept a testing record in either Quest or LabCorp, where I'll get all the tests through my doctor ordered, get them done at the lab, my insurance pays for it, but I have a full record. So if someone can show you 3 months of tests on Quest or LabCorp, I would say accept them. But if you're doing any kind of hardcore, you straight, gay, and all of the above, you've got to have people with testing. Like, you just do.
All right. So you had a couple things there that I want to talk about the testing. I want to talk about the hiring. But let's do the testing first, because you dived into that.
Okay.
So there's currently a company, I guess, it sounds like, that does most of the hardcore testing.
Talent testing has been around for a long time. They were, I believe, the second tier company in LA. I was registered with them, but never tested with them because I was using another company that was across the street from my porn agent's office. So convenient. And he was paying. Yes, there's talent testing and VIP testing. The legit porn companies, content creators, and shooters that are actually paying models and actresses for scenes or compensating them somehow, even if it's a shared usage, are sending people there to get tested, which is great. The difference in testing between back in the day and now is originally you only had to have an HIV test. That came about when I got into hardcore. That's all they tested you for, is you had to go get a PCR DNA. No, you only had to get a rapid HIV test, and you could work. If you got it in the morning and it came back negative, you could work late that day. And then there were a massive HIV outbreak in the industry, and they made everyone get a PCR DNA and then wait 3 days to work. So that came about in the early 90s. Now they're doing PCR DNA, HIV 1 and 2, RPR, which is syphilis, chlamydia, gonorrhea, a couple of bacterial infections for women, which seems just a no-brainer, but useless to test for. What else? They're testing for the antigen to hepatitis A and B to see if you had the vaccine or if you are infected. Hepatitis C, if you've had the vaccine or been treated for it, or if you're currently infected, which are great. The two things that no one's ever tested for, which I was advocating with the early adult industry guild before it became what it is now in the early 90s, was the testing standards of, you should get like a little plastic membership card, like your picture, you know, stage name, real name, birthday, whatever, and some sort of ID number. And if you test positive for herpes 1 and 2, it should be on the card. And if you test positive for HPV, it should be on the card. And if you had tested positive but are now negative for anything else, I mean, it should be on there, because I've always felt talent should know if they're working with someone who has herpes 1 and 2 or HPV, because you're going to, you know, if they're active, you're going to get it by working with them. And that's a couple of things I've never tested for, but I've always felt like people should know that. But, you know.
I know, I've definitely heard in some sex positive podcasts where HPV is not that big of a deal because so many people have it. But I do agree. It shouldn't be left to chance.
Yeah, and they can't say it's not that big of a deal because it leads to cervical cancer and a couple other kinds of cancer. And if you get it in your throat, like a couple of mainstream musicians and actors did from apparently eating a lot of pussy, it can cause throat cancer. And if left unchecked, you know, you lose your voice. And have to have some really bad surgeries and radiation. So HPV actually is a big deal. Everybody should be, like I said, should be tested for it. And if you're positive, at least the person working with you should know, and you should be aware enough that if you are positive, to male or female, to get, you know, checked every few months, like by a doctor, to see if you have any, you know, an outbreak, and then get them removed. I've actually seen guys, that I was supposed to work with like, you know, HPV bumps. And I'm like, dude, we're putting a condom on, or I'm not fucking working with you. Like, you know what that is? And they've said, oh, well, everybody's got it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not trying to get cervical cancer, you dumb fuck. You need to go to a urologist and get that shit burned off your dick and get tested for it and get on high dose valacyclovir, which is the anti-herpes medication that also prevents outbreaks of HPV. So yeah, it's a big deal. And I've also heard people say, well, everyone in the industry has herpes. So, I mean, if you're going to be in it more than 2 weeks, you're going to get herpes. And I'm like, again, that causes all kinds of issues. If you're planning on having children, which a lot of these young girls are, you can't do a vaginal delivery because you're going to have a severe herpes outbreak and it can lead to blindness in your child, among other things. So it is a big fucking deal. And you should, like I said, I've always advocated for, you should know. And they're like, oh, well, privacy. And I'm like, privacy in porn? Seriously? It should be stamped on the card. And there was some traction on that. I mean, they've progressed and they're obviously testing for a lot more stuff. But those are two things you should have to be tested for. And it should be like a permanent stamp or a punch. They should punch out a star on the back of the card for herpes and HPV if you've had it, you know. And they should be giving people medication for it. And literally, they will literally throw PrEP at anybody now who works in the adult industry, but they're not giving people high dose valacyclovir and then a low dose daily maintenance after a liver check to make sure their herpes and their HPV isn't breaking out to where they're going to pass it on to someone. It's just part of that like dumb fuck thing in the industry that I've never understood. And it's not the talent, it's the responsibility of the testing companies and the agents.
I wonder if it's because they're worried that too many people will have it, and if they start flagging those people. But if you have it, you can still work with other actors and actresses that have it.
If you've had hepatitis A or B, it'll show an active infection or just that you have antibodies to it, which means of two different types, which means A, you've been vaccinated against hepatitis A and B, which is what my antibodies show up as because I've had the vaccine. Or like one of my male friends, it showed up that he had a previous infection to hepatitis B, but cleared it and is now have the antibodies to it. But an active infection is a big deal. So yeah, I mean, it is important to test for all the hepatitis like they do, but it's weird that they won't test for the herpes or, HPV, because if you've had any of the hepatitises, there's a variety of courses of drugs that will help your body clear it, similar to what PrEP does for HIV early infection. But like I said, you know, people show up positive for herpes, they should test, and they should immediately, you know, get on the high dose valacyclovir to clear it and then a low dose daily maintenance so they won't have an outbreak. They'll be able to work without gaping, goozing sores on their genitals, and they won't pass it on to anybody. It's sort of like hepatitis. It's kind of a responsibility thing. And I think you, as someone working in the industry, especially the younger girls that get into it and have no idea what they're getting into, you should know that, like, anyway, you should know what you're working with.
All right. So let's pivot from there. Rather than talking about disgusting news and gaping sores.
Sexy.
I know, right? Oh. If someone is getting into adult work, especially now with the creator economy, and they show up on set with somebody they're supposed to be filming with, what should they expect to bring and what should they expect to see in regards to testing?
Yeah, there's professional companies. Like, just say, let's just use like, who do I work for that I like? Naughty America shoots down here, right? So let's say you're using Naughty America, and then on the other side of the coin, we'll use Bob's Horny Broads Next Door content creation, right? So any professional company and anybody getting into the industry or anybody who wants to start shooting things in the industry, you should arrange a bunch of stuff ahead of time, not just confirm your date and time that you're booking people for. You should confirm if they're in the talent testing system and have a history where they can check tests over a period of time that you're being responsible, or that they've got a testing history in another non-industry platform like Quest or LabCorp, like I do, right? You should see the testing history ahead of time. You should make sure that if you're seen as like on Monday the 1st, that they're going a week before to get all the required tests and that they've signed a release so the producer, director, whoever can get a copy of it. What normally you used to provide on set, and I'm going to sound so professional here, but this is just professional me, is I normally was told to back in the day, and this is how it worked back in the day, and I don't think it works like this now, but I always bring and was always told to bring two copies of my IDs, which is the driver's license, passport, and a second form of ID, like a debit card, social security card, something else with your name on it, right? So I always bring two copies of my IDs, two copies of my tests, and because I'm incorporated, I bring two copies of a W-9, which has my business and my business tax ID on it versus my name and my social. So I come prepared. You used to have to do that back in the day. Now I don't think they make you do it. I think they copy your IDs, copy your tests, and make you fill out the W-9 there. But those are things I come prepared with to make everyone's life easier. And when you actually show up prepared like that, the producer, director, whoever is just like, wow, this person's on it, you know, like, and they'll remember that. I used to be told it would confirm what wardrobe I was supposed to bring. Is this like slutty teacher, neighbor next door? Is this just hot stripper dress with the G-string under it? Like what wardrobe, what accessories, what shoes? How do you want my hair and makeup? Or there's a hair and makeup person there. The bigger companies will tell you all this ahead of time. The smaller companies and independent shooters, I've found, at least kind of dipping my toes back in the industry, they don't. And I've always asked, again, to be professional, okay, well, should I be buying some new neon thing on Amazon? Do you want me to go get a spray tan? Like, should I have tan lines or not? Do you like my nail polish to be red? Can I wear black? Or you want French manicure? Should I be Brazilian or still have a, you know, upside down triangle of hair? You know, should my hair be blown out or curly? Like, how do you want my makeup? And people are amazed these days that I'm so professional, but this is the way you had to conduct yourself if you really wanted to work, you know, back in the day, because you were competing with, and while I'm hot and sexy and pretty and was a real regular model, I mean, there were some women in the industry at the time I was in it that were just, you know, drop dead stupid gorgeous. Like, I mean, Terry Weigel, you know, was the Playmate of the Year. One really pretty girl. And there was a bunch of really, really gorgeous girls who were in the adult industry who were just flawless, and trying to work with them or compete with them for jobs, I mean, you really had to up your game and be super professional, right? Besides, you know, keeping yourself super fit. So those are things I would ask if you're a talent, if you're shooting something, like you're a photographer or a producer, I would figure out ahead of time. And be real specific and not take for granted that talent, especially new talent, is going to show up with anything more than themselves. So I would, you know, figure out what you're going to shoot and what they need to bring and how you want them to look ahead of time.
That sounds like a lot of work to do.
You know, it is, but like, I just see, and maybe it's just me, but that's why I've always had a really good reputation in mainstream and adult, is I'm trying to make like our day easier and our day goes smoothly because it's both our time, right? So I want to be on time and have everything ready and be prepared and be looking exactly how you want me to look and doing exactly what you want me to do. And, you know, that's how I want to be, because I've seen so many people show up, even having been told all that, no ID, they forgot it, they look like shit, they're hungover, they should be tanned, they're ghost white, they didn't get waxed, they're sort of half grown in, they got 3 inches of roots, their nail polish is chipping off. You know, I got same thing with guys. Not so as much though. The guys in the industry usually are really on it because there's so much more competition for scenes where, you know, girls, they always at least used to allow more irresponsibility and bad behavior. But I just want to make everyone's day easier and be professional. it seems like there's a lot less professionality in the business these days, though at least the short time I've been here, especially on the online only content shooters. As far as the content trade people approaching me, I don't do content trade because I don't have an OnlyFans. I apparently do have a Pornhub, X Hamster, and some other channels that I was not aware that I had. So there's going to be a little, we need to have a conversation about someone making money off my content. But I don't shoot my own content. I'm not interested in shooting my own content. It's not, if you weren't in OnlyFans, it's sort of like if you got in early, you're making money if you keep up with it. But a lot of people got in during the pandemic and after, and it's very difficult when you have, you know, like 100 million people doing the same sort of thing-ish, and everyone's kind of already got all the niches covered. Even if you're on social 24/7 and you know how to market your stuff and you're cross-posting on 4 different platforms and you've got someone doing all your hashtags and keywords and SEO, it's a lot of work. And to really be successful, you'd need to hire someone to really handle all that for you while you're doing it yourself. And I've seen the numbers, and there's, for all of that, if you're spending $1,000 a month to get your stuff out there, you're making $1,000 a month or maybe two back. And that's basically a full-time job. So no, unless you somehow go viral and someone discovers who you really are or something. And then you can do an OnlyFans and drop something like that one girl did who made $1 million overnight, but that's rare. So yeah, when people say, oh, well, I do a content trade, I'm like, okay, one, you're going to broker this scene off to 4 or 5 different channels, and you're going to cut 4 or 5 different scenes out of it and probably 20 different clips to sell. But you want me to sign a release and not get paid? No. And that's a bait thing that a lot of guys are using to get girls, you know, into doing a lot of free content for them. It's sort of like the sleazy producers back in the day that would tell a guy, hey, you get me 3 girls for this scene, I'll pay you, you know, $5,000. Just pay them whatever you want. You get to keep the rest. So the agent, producer, pimp, whatever, would tell the girls, oh, you're getting $500 a scene because you're new. And he would bank the other, you know, $3,000. That's kind of the new pimp, the new sleazy boyfriend, is a lot of these low-end content creator guys who are getting girls to do all kinds of shit for free. And they're making money out the gate with it, which is, like, again, not cool. But there's no school for, like, how to get into porn, what to look out for. I don't know. I feel like I need my own podcast about that.
This podcast is growing. So you mentioned, I think, you got $5,000 for your first scene, and a lot of scenes after that were in the $3,000 range. Was that the standard rate at the time?
It depended on if you were working for like a big company like Vivid, Wicked, VCA, GVA, a lot of the really big A-list companies, right? And then were you going to be an A-list contract girl, or were you like a B-list girl? I was always a B-list girl because I wasn't, you know, a Playboy playmate, and I looked great, but I didn't have 42 double X boobs. And anyway, so it was $5,000 for the first boy girl. I think 3 for the second, I think 2 for the third. I think my first anal was like $2,000, and my first DP was 3. Back in the day, the standard rate was, I want to say, $1,000 for a boy girl, basically for everybody, right? It was like $1,000 for a boy girl. I think it was $600 for a girl and $400 for a solo masturbation, $300 for a quickie blowjob, handjob, or footjob thing. But those were always quickie things. The girl things were always more of a scene. Boy girl things were more of a scene. I think anal was one guy. I think anal bumped it up to $1,200 or $1,300. I think 2 guys was $1,500. I think DP was $1,800.
I'm just imagining like a menu now with all these prices.
Yeah. I literally feel like I should do a writing thing on FET and be like, so here's the prices back in the day. Here's what my rates are now, unless it's, you know, not a professional company and you're just shooting for some online stuff, then it'll be this much, this much, this much. From my understanding, it's about half of that now for everything. So if you just half everything I just told you, that's what companies are paying. Wow. The reason it's half is it's become And if one more person says sex positive, I'm going to punch him in the face. It's just a stupid word. It's like saying I'm pro-life instead of pro-choice. It's like an oxymoron, right? Like, I'm sex positive. Well, everybody's should be sex positive. Shut up. You're just not anti-porn. Yeah. Anyway, I think once a lot of the, and it wasn't the Pam Anderson, Tommy Lee thing, once Kim Kardashian built a $1 billion empire out of porn, it's sort of, and then more celebrities accidentally started having their tapes linked, wink, wink.
Yeah.
It became more socially acceptable because all of a sudden there were like these mainstream people with famous parents, or they had been on a big TV show. Like, more mainstream people started having those things leak, so more people started doing it, and that became a thing. And then you started having some lower end C or D list mainstream actresses suddenly getting into porn, like Sasha Gray. There was a whole bunch. So that sort of snowballed, I'd say, about 10 years ago into it becoming more socially acceptable for women. Men were always allowed to be in porn and mainstream actors. It's hilarious. But women, it was always that, you know, Madonna whore theory, right? Like, you're either the actress or the porn whore. It can't be both. So it became more acceptable. And as younger millennials came up, became more feministas, the general social shift became more socially acceptable for women to express their sexuality, to do more adulty type things. And then it really exploded, I'd say, in the past 5 years with OnlyFans, and people started realizing your kid's best friend's mom needs to make some money because she's single, so she's got an OnlyFans home. She's at home at lunch, putting the kids for a nap, and in the shower, like, filming herself, you know, with the pizza guy. Like, it suddenly became more mainstream, more socially acceptable. People knew people that were doing it. It wasn't like some hookers in Vegas. It's like they knew the nice lady from the PTA was doing it. So, it must be like an okay business.
Yeah.
So it's exploded. So you now have hundreds of millions of girls all over the world over the age of 18 getting into the industry. One, because it's more acceptable. Two, some of them figure it'll up their rate of doing the featured dance gigs, or as a stripper, they'll actually get paid to strip and be featured, or they get sold this thing that, like, you're also going to be able to do an OnlyFans and shoot your own content and make like millions and millions of dollars every year, and you'll be the next Jenna Jameson or Joanna Angel or somebody, right? Which is like not true, okay. But there's more demand. It's more socially acceptable. And a lot of younger girls who grew up with the online Instagram instant like people love me because I'm sexy thing, that they just sort of naturally fall into it.
I'm stunned by the fact that you said that the prices were half or so now, because some of those prices are under what nude models are charging. I've interviewed with models that charge $350 an hour for photographers and charge upwards of $1,000 a day for a nude art shoot, let alone anything pornographic.
It depends what your day rate is. So here's another point. There's a difference, and a lot of creepy guys, you know, and unscrupulous producer directors like to do day rate versus per scene, right? If you're doing there's a difference between like doing a boy girl scene back in the day for just say like Wicked, right? Or a big company, where, you know, it was some acting. There was a theme behind it. There was blowjob scene, then, you know, oral on you. And then there was, you know, like six positions, missionary, cowgirl, reverse cowgirl, you know, doggy, pile driver, like any position they could think of. So it was like six positions, two orals, some making out, dialogue, right? That could be, if you were good and you worked with a male talent that you knew, you could bang that out in 4 hours. But with hair and makeup and walking through the scene, I mean, that's a whole day. And they didn't book more than two things a day, right? Because that's still a 12-hour day for the crew. Nowadays, there were people who would do little oral, a couple of positions, pull out, come on her ass. Like, it was shorter scenes. So it was it was still a rate to do the scene, but you knew you could book two things a day and you'd get paid less because it was a lot less work. And it wasn't for a big company. It was for a mid-level company, right? Now, as far as even mainstream modeling, you know, if it was a go in for, it's an all day campaign, you're going to have several different outfit changes, we're going to do this, 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 and that, that's a day rate. But if it's, hey, it's a shoot for one item of clothing, or we're just doing an ad for their new campaign where it'll be a few hours, same thing, right? That would be like a per scene rate or a per set rate. So yeah, I mean, as a nude model, if it's a full day shoot, I mean, and I'm going to be there like 8 hours with a break or 6 hours with a break, $1,000 is probably what I would charge. But if I'm only there for 2 hours and it's a solo art fetish thing and it's just me, I mean, it depends on what it's for, who it's for. It really just depends. There's day rates, and then there's per set rates, which is the same as a day rate or a per shoot rate.
No, that's fair. I was just thinking of, you mentioned that like a blowjob or a handjob scene might only be $400, and now it may be half that. I was just like, Jesus, that's less than 2 hours. But I guess it would take less than 2 hours.
Oh my God, a blowjob or a handjob scene? If you can't shoot that in 20 minutes straight through, you're an idiot. And when people try to go, well, we're going to do part of the blowjob here, part of the blowjob there, or what if he can come twice? Can we do it two different places? It's like, no, that's two different scenes that you're going to sell. Fuck off. Like I did a foot job scene the other day, and literally edited down, which I wish talent knew this. There's a difference between shooting and edited down content, right? So if you can shoot straight through and you're a really good actor and you know the person you're working with and you know this company is going to edit this down to a 20-minute scene, you could probably shoot it straight through in just 30 minutes just to give them a little extra here and there if they needed like edit. But yeah, you should be able to do hand job, blow job, foot job, basic stuff like that. You should be able to shoot it in half an hour. So in and out in an hour, the difference. And then again, if you're doing a boy girl, they just want a few positions and a little oral, you should be able to bang that out in an hour or two, but that's different than you're going to be there for 4 hours because we want 16 different things.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of content creators these days aren't doing, I mean, you know, in a lot of porn, there was sort of a prescribed, do a little missionary, do a little doggy style, reverse cowgirl, and then something crazy. But a lot of content creators now just seem to be hammering it out.
Literally. Yeah, I've seen a lot of stuff where they're just doing like two positions and a facial, or two positions and a creep diet. Which is funny because that's another thing that was never popular back in the day, the creep pie thing. They always wanted to pull out and jerk off on your tits or your ass, and then occasionally facials, but it was never the big thing that it is now. And nobody was doing cream pies except when you would shoot for Playboy, Cinemax, or Showtime. They would fake a cream pie because they couldn't show a guy pulling out and actually ejaculating. So they would fake a cream pie cum shot, which was hilarious.
Yeah, lots of groans and lots of, you know, muscle.
Right, but cream pies are real popular now too.
I know in the kind of the genre that if I ever get a chance to make, I want to do cuck and hot wife porn. I know that's a big part of that, like the whole breeding thing.
Yeah, that's definitely really, the breeding thing is really, really hugely popular as even a fantasy thing. And I found that because that's popular in porn now, in my personal life, in role play, the breeding thing is, you know, a big thing, which is hilarious because I'm way too old to breed and I've always was on birth control when I was of age to breed. So it's hilarious, but it's an adult role play fantasy thing too.
Yeah. Yep. All right. You mentioned, there are several things in there that I wanted to, so you mentioned about hiring and about bringing in amateur male talent, and there's always such a competition for being male talent in there. I imagine that's probably a big problem for content creators now too.
A lot of guys, and I've seen this in some scenes I've watched, all the young guys, obviously, you know, rock hard, could knock shit off a table with their cock, right? Because they're young, 20, early 20s or early 30s, right? And most of the guys now versus back in the day are in like really great fitness model shape. Like between fitness model and light bodybuilder, most of the guys are really in amazing shape. There's a lot more good-looking men in it, and a lot of former mainstream models and actors and musicians are in it now, very similar to it's more socially acceptable. There's one guy that I know, who I won't mention, who was a mainstream model actor and on well, there's two. One was on Broadway and one was in shows in Vegas. And I knew that they had been doing some side content stuff with some porn girls they knew just for fun and money, who've gotten into porn big time now and are some of the top dogs because they're tall, really good looking, hung, you know, really well built. And they're only picking and choosing to work with the better companies and the more professional girls, which is a funny, more socially acceptable thing with the guys too now. So they're on it, right? And they're all rock hard all the time. The wind blows the right way. They're comfortable walking around naked with a hard on. But as you get into guys in their mid-30s and up, the smart guys in the business know that, because most of them are health nuts anyway, versus a lot of alcoholics and drug addicts back in the day, which was also hilarious. Amusing on the guy's side, not amusing on the girl's side. They realize that over 35, you know, your testosterone level starts slowly dropping. So by the time you're 40, it's down. By the time you're 45, it's gone. So in getting their lab tests done, they're doing hormone panels and starting to either do a little testosterone shot in the ass every week, or there's a hormone pellet where they can stick a testosterone pellet under your skin that will release itself over 6 months, which is super easy, which is what I do. Because if you don't bump your testosterone, your bad estrogen gets high, right? Which is why guys, even if they look like Magic Mike, have an erection, but it's not rock hard or it's semi, and they're wearing cock rings in videos and that I've seen. And the cock ring is a sure sign of my dick ain't getting fully hard. And I've actually told a couple guys, look, man, it's, I know you don't want to think this, but it's like human evolution, health, whatever your age. Go to this place here. They do all the free hormone tests. They'll give you a shot that day. If you can't shoot yourself in the ass, you can have them do it or just get the hormone implant. And you're literally going to have, you know, a rock hard dick if the wind blows like you're 22 again. And it also protects you from prostate cancer, heart disease, dementia, and a bunch of other shit. Like hormone balancing is so important for men and women. But for men, the testosterone shots are important. And any guys in the industry who I would say is, I'm just going to say over 35. Things change when you're young. You'll stick your dick in anything. It's true, right? But if you're like 35 or over and you've been in the business or just in life a while, you know, there's going to be some young girl who shows up drunk and her pussy smells like dead fish or something. And you're going to have to fuck her because her test came back perfectly fine. And you're just not going to be into it. And your dick isn't either. So I always suggest, and back in the day, the smart producer directors would throw a Viagra at a guy and be like, start chewing 30 minutes before the scene. So their dick would be hard for the scene all day. So I just, one, do your hormone testing starting at 35 and start doing testosterone in the business or not really for men. And yeah, get a prescription for Viagra if you're working in the industry, because there's going to be times when you're going to need it. Yeah, I got to say, I've been cruising through some of the Pornhub videos that keep getting sent over, suggested to me on my channel, which I apparently have and can't log into and have to contact them. Because I'm like, wait, I have like 10,000 subscribers and 120,000 views. Should I not be making money off this? So I've got to get in there and deal with them, sidebar. But I've been looking at some of the guys now. Oh my God, there's like a whole plethora of just mid-30s, just gorgeous. Italians, French guys, you know, pretty American models. I'm like making a list and checking it twice for Christmas.
I mean, I can imagine a lot of it, especially in this day and age. It's the guys in their 30s and 40s that can afford to pay the women to make content. The guys in their 20s, that's got to be trade because they don't have a couple thousand dollars laying around to make something.
Well, right. And the older, smarter guys that are in the business are going to know that you should have different types of girls, different looks in different scenes. If you're doing your own OnlyFans or content creation, like there's fans that are going to want to see you with super young girl with no boobs, skinny. A BBW, maybe somebody requests, you know, a black girl, somebody wants an Asian girl, like whatever. But they're also wise enough to know that, and it's hilarious because I've been told, oh, MILFs are under 40, 35 to 40. I'm like, no, back in the day, MILFs were 40 to 50. They wouldn't book girls who were not 39-ish. And now it's like, oh, we only book MILFs 35 to 40. I'm like, okay, one, the average girl in the business is 25 and looks fucking 35 to 40. Two, nobody's buying that any of these girls 30, 35 are actually MILFs. And that's a huge market. Because I've even found on the personal side, you know, most guys that are like, I want to say 25, I don't try to date guys in their 20s, but most guys like in their late 20s to say late 30s are not dating women their age. They're dating women like in their 40s and 50s because, you know, you're smarter, you're more successful, you get your shit together, you don't care, you don't want to look in their phone, you're not going to text them 15 times a day, and that you know what you're doing in the bedroom. And that's a huge turn on to much younger guys. So to me, a lot of these content creator guys, if I do make a trip out to LA and I finally get contact with Alamo, I'll be like, oh, I will definitely do a scene with you for content because it's going to bring me, you know, it is going to bring me hits on all these video channels that I apparently someone's making money off me. So I would do it. I would do content trade, but it's going to have to be with like one of these top 10 guys, top 15 guys, and it would require them, you know, plugging me 3 times a week. And it's a whole deal, right? You don't just do it and hope for the best. But I would definitely do a good scene with them because it's like, oh, I definitely want to fuck you. Because some of these guys just, I've seen them on video. And when they're with a girl they have chemistry with, it's hot. It's not just like mechanical bullshit fucking.
So that's actually kind of leads me to a new question that we mm-hmm. didn't discuss beforehand. How much of fucking and the porn industry is because of purely money, or how many people like really enjoy the sex and want to make money on top of that?
I'd say it's a lot less now than it used to be, just from what I've seen. Like I've seen, and again, this kind of goes to the how good is a girl in the scene and does she really enjoy it, right? So I've seen some really niche stuff. Like I stumbled upon a channel on Pornhub called Mormon Girls. And it's, and but here's the thing. It's shot with like a really harsh light and a black background. Like it's like a table and a desk, you know, with a black background, black set with like one light. It's really, really harsh. The guy is like the preacher, all dressed up. The girls are very young, very pretty, very natural, very naked, you know, and they're being inducted into the church, and you know he breeds them all because it's kind of true to life. But anyway, that is really, the girls look like they would be there in the scene. He looks like the guy that would really be there. They actually all look like they're enjoying it. It's well shot versus some of the other boy girlish scenes I've seen that are just the race to the bottom and how many dicks can we shove in this girl's holes at once. And where the girls look like they're obviously exaggerating it and faking it, like screaming and yelling every dirty thing they've ever heard, but like they're wincing during the entire, you know, scene. I think a lot of it is for the money and girls figuring if they do more and more and more hardcore stuff, they'll get even more and more popular. You know, if there's a girl that can take 4 dicks in their ass, they're going to be the most popular girl, and then they'll get way more bookings and way more money for their content. And it's like a vicious cycle. But I've seen a lot of stuff that is really, I would say unpleasant, but it's not a turn on. And porn's supposed to be a turn on. Like if I watch a video and I'm just not like really turned on and want to like, you know, have one of my boyfriends over and masturbate to it, I'm like, you know, I can tell when people are just not into it and going through the motions. But it just, like I said, it depends. I think some of the older female male actors that are in their mid-30s who are paired together well do some really hot stuff, and you can tell that they're really into it. And then there's just a lot of the younger girls with really any age guy, and it just looks like these girls are just doing what they think they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's a big thing in pornography, of course, is are they enjoying it? Is it realistic-ish? Yeah. Realistic enough that you can fool your brain?
Yeah. And I'm just, trust me, go look up the Mormon Girls thing. There's a couple of, I'm going to like reach out to them like and just, you're like, if you guys want to review, like anything you're shooting in that black room is amazing. They've done some other stuff that might have been shot earlier or later. I'm not sure outside, but if they stick with this one kind of look and genre, it's really fucking cool. And it's a huge turn on. Like, trust me, my fireman boyfriend was over and he's like, what are you watching on Pornhub now? And I'm like, you got to see this. And he's like, oh my God, I'm not normally into like the young girl thing with the older guy, but what the fuck is that? I'm like, exactly. Right. So we're like, you know, getting all warmed up watching that. So that's a big plug for them, because it's rare that I see any kind of new niche porn that's really a turn on, or any any boy girl stuff that's super hot. I can't remember. See, there's a couple other sites I've seen that are actually shooting like on a set with decent wardrobe, with hair and makeup, and there's boy girl stuff that's super fucking hot. I can't remember the companies, but there are people still doing it that are really like purists, you know, like, no, we're going to do something really fucking hot. We're going to get our own fan base. We're not in this quantity over versus quality. Right. And right. I'm hoping that there's so much quantity and so much garbage out there that maybe more of the industry will start turning around again and do more quality stuff versus quantity. But I don't know, you know, I'm just sort of dipping my toes back into this for you know, fun and profit. So
you mentioned that, and we're just about out of time. Oh, so no. One last question. What made you decide to get back into it?
Kind of how I got into it professionally in the first place. I'm single, looking to mingle. Figured I would dip my toes back into it and see what's going on. Everybody seems to be shooting in Florida. I obviously have a ridiculous amount of credits and, you know, a reputation as being reliable, whatever, good scene. So I started flipping through a lot of the bigger male talent, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm fucking all these guys. I mean, they're all very, they're guys I would have sex with if I met them at a bar, but if I'm going to have sex with them on video, which is even more of a turn on, the whole voyeurism thing, and I'm getting paid, fucking fabulous. So that's it. I'm single for fun and profit. I also have a great location that I can either rent out for shoots or have people, you know, traveling talent stay and shoot at. So again, fun and profit, right?
All right. Well,
also, who doesn't like a comeback, right? What's her face just did a comeback. The Charlie Sheen's girlfriend, old girlfriend, the little blonde girl, Katie Morgan. She just did a comeback after 10 years, 15 years. She's really the only one I've seen that was even around then. And there really is, that's the other funny part. There is nobody, male talent or female talent, that was working when I was working around anymore. The big stars were a lot older than me when I started, and a lot of the girls that continue to work are out of the business. It's a whole new crop of like 18 to 28 year olds with maybe a couple of, maybe a handful of 35 to 40 year olds, but not much. It's a lot of very, very young girls now, which I mean, the industry never learned that, like, your average guy, except for niche, most men are not into seeing someone that looks like their, you know, brother's daughter getting fucked by six guys. Like, it's just kind of a weird thing with the young girls and men that are not super young, and the guys with money who really get into porn and would spend money on it are not your younger guys. So they're really not into that super young girl thing, but whatever.
Yeah. No, I definitely think some go a little bit on the flat chested, slim hipped. They go, you know, a little too far.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for sure. She's 18. I know she's 18, but she doesn't look it.
Well, you know, and I know we're out of time, but that's the thing. Back when they were first starting to try the adult guild, you know, where you get health insurance, join it like SAG, minimum rates per scene, adult pause and adult welfare and AIM and all those organizations were really working towards all that. And there is some movement on that now, but they were trying to pass a law that you had to be 21 to do porn, because if you have to be 21 to drink or get a medical marijuana card, and now in a lot of states to buy cigarettes or vaping products, getting in doing porn at 18 is a really big life decision that you may or may not be mentally, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually able to handle at 18 versus 21. And it is a big difference in your mindset between 18 and 21. And I mean, the amount of like girls who've spiraled into alcoholism, drug abuse, and suicides. I mean, it's the rate is going up exponentially with the rate of more and more younger girls getting into it. And I've always been a believer that I think you should have to be 21. But
well, that looks like a pretty decent place to end it. So, Samantha, where can everyone find you online?
I have a Twitter, which is @TheRealMeridian, which was the name I started working under in the industry, but that's a talk for another day. It's @TheRealMeridian on Twitter, and it does say Samantha St. James, the real Meridian, bitches. On the Twitter, I have my FetLife profile for those people who are more into the fetish BDSM community. again, it's under Samantha St. James. I don't think it comes up if you Google it, because FetLife is still kind of a little underground thing.
Yeah.
What else? I apparently, like, I've been told, have Pornhub, X Hamster, Clips for Sale, and many vids, but I do not own or run any of those, so I will be Googling myself and checking on those later.
Yeah, and I'll put a link to the FetLife in the show notes, so that way people don't have to try and find you.
Yeah, yeah, FetLife and Twitter. My DMs are open, so if anybody is, you know, interested in art model content, which I actually enjoy, and I will do some fetish BDSM nude art model stuff on trade if it's an amazing photographer and there's a location involved. There's some things I will do on trade, but it's definitely photography and it's definitely art stuff. DM me on Twitter, I suppose, or DM me on FetLife. I answer as many messages as I can get to, you know, daily or weekly. I'm organized and on time, and I do require a deposit on everything I book now, though, because so many flakes. Not just talent, photographers, video people, so many flakes. So I require a deposit up front just to hold my time.
That's interesting, especially considering how photographers complain about model flakes.
Oh my God. No, it's hilarious. Photographers complain about models and adult talent, and I'm like, I was on hold for two scenes last week and they said Wednesday and Friday. And then it became Friday and Saturday. And this is a big company that shoots in Florida with big LA male talent. They're kind of C-listers, but whatever. And they literally, one of these idiots showed up COVID positive. They didn't have any other talent to book in. They think everyone else is exposed. I'm like, okay. But there was other local talent they could have booked in. So I lost both scenes. And I'm like, you know, in the future, If I'm doing two scenes and we talked about for what I was going to do, $2,500, I'm like, you're paying me half of that up front to hold the date. And it's good forever until we shoot, but that is a non-refundable deposit because I wasted 4 days of bookings and I could have done a couple of foot fetish, foot job things because people love my feet again. It was always a thing. Well, my feet are back. So I lost money. So yeah, I mean, there's more flaky models and talent, but I'm telling you, there's a lot of unprofessional photographers and videographers around now.
Do you have any ongoing projects you'd like to mention? And with that, we are done. Check us out at the nsfwphotographypodcast.com, on Twitter as at nsfwphotography, Instagram at the nsfwphotographypodcast, and subscribe at your favorite podcast app. Before I let everyone go, I have a quote that I think really applies to today's discussion from Zena Schreck, from Demons of the Flesh, The Complete Guide to Left-Hand Path Sex Magic. Sex is like an atom bomb, a potent weapon which fascinates and frightens. We're afraid to let it loose, and yet we all have our finger on the button. Have a great week, everyone.